So we have a delightful subject this morning, meeting the Yamadutas. You know who the Yamadutas are? Tell me what you know. What are the Yamadutas?
Scary folks.
No.
Like the one who takes away the life from the body.
And? Who sees the Yamadutas and who doesn't see the Yamadutas at the time of death? Everybody? Do we all?
Yeah.
There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhaya. Bhaya means?
Fear.
Mahabhaya, great fear. So, Krishna says in that verse, even a small svalpa amount of dharma, small amount of performance on this path, saves one from the greatest fear. The greatest fear is being the Yamadutas. Prabhupada explained. They're very fierce looking, as you said. And there's several of them, and their forms are subtle. And the ropes that they use to drag the subtle body from the body, the gross body, the ropes are subtle. So they take the subtle body of a person that has not performed dharma, or even sva-alpa dharma, sinful persons, they are then taken by the Yamadutas before the court of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the Lord of Death. And the Lord of Death has an assistant who takes very careful notes. He has a big database on everybody's sinful activities. And hearing the sinful activities and the fact that that person has not performed prayaschitta, atonement. In different religions, there's different processes of atonement. So you committed some sin, and there's a means to atone for that sin, neutralize the reaction to that sin. And those that have not performed atonement, and those that have done abundant sinful activity, then their sins are recited. Yamaraj decides what hellish planet they deserve to go to, and off they go to the hellish planet. So that's what the Yamadutas do. Just a little reference, scriptural reference to the Yamadutas is found in the sixth canto. This is third canto. In the sixth canto, the story of Ajahnila is told by Shukadeva Goswami through Maharaj Prakshit. And because Ajahnila in his youth was a Brahmin, pious Brahmin boy, and he was engaged and trained by his father and very nicely, and married a nice Brahmin girl, and they were, you know, young, newly married. And he was engaged one day and going to gather materials for a fire yajna, walking in a forest path, gathering wood and flowers and different items. And there he saw a Shudra and a Shudrani embracing and going at it. And his mind became disturbed. But so disturbed that even when he went back, he couldn't get that vision off of his mind. And he tried his Brahminical procedures of saying mantras, and that thought, the sight of what he had seen, the prostitute embraced by the Shudra, to wouldn't leave. So he, thinking, feeling, willing, in sequence, turned into an action. He went to find the prostitute and took the saving, specifically, it says in the Bhagavatam, the dowry that he had received at the time of his wedding. He started spending that to go see the prostitute. And just went on and on. Eventually he left his home and cohabited with the prostitute, and fathered a number of children. And in his elder stage of life, specifically it says he was in his 80s, old man, still with attraction like that. The time of death came, and when the time of death came, the Amadutas came, because he had been so sinful. Then there was this discussion when he called for his youngest son, who he had named Narayana. He called in great fear, that Mahabhaya fear, when he saw the Amadutas. He called and said, Narayana. And the agents of Narayana came to stop the agents of Yamaraj, called the Yamadutas. And Yamadutas said, who are you? Nobody has ever... Who stops death? Who do you think you are? Who are you? And they said, well, we'll tell you who we are, but first you say who you are. Well, we're the agents of Yamaraj, he's the Lord of death. Well, if you're the agent of the Lord of death, then it's your duty to know the purpose of your master. And the purpose of the master is it knows Dharma perfectly well, so we have a Dharma quiz for you. And the Dharma quiz question was multiple. Is everyone? Is everyone punishable? Since regardless of one's good intention, certainly some sins, some mistakes are going to be made. So if mistakes are made, does that mean everyone is punishable? Who are those that are not subject to punishment? And several other parts. So they said something that said, well, he did lots of sinful activities, this and that, and he didn't do any atonement, no prayaschitta. So he's subject to being punished. So please step back, because we're taking him. They said, you don't know the laws of Dharma. Get out of here. Basically, they didn't say it like that. But the law of Dharma, yes, it's true, did lots of sinful activities. Yes, it's true, he didn't do atonement. But he called the holy name of Narayana. And that holy name of Narayana is sufficient to eradicate the reactions of sins, not only in this life, but so many, many, many lifetimes. And not only him, but his relatives, and for so many generations, the names of Narayana are so powerful. And he was calling the name of Narayana. And yes, it's true, he wasn't even intending to call Lord Narayana's name, but he was calling Lord Narayana's name in this absolute, and so step back. Leave him alone. The Amadutas were astonished. No one has ever stopped us like this before. So, not only in the Bhagavatam, but in the world, in religions of the world, there's acknowledgement of sin and the nature of sin. Is it blocks one's vision of truth. This little bit, this discussion at MIT. One cannot see that which is spiritual.
Forms are subtle, and the ropes that they use to drag the subtle body from body, the ghost body, the ropes are subtle. So they take the subtle body of a person that has not performed karma, or even thought of karma, sinful person. They are then taken by the Yamadutas before the court of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the Lord of Death. And the Lord of Death has an assistant who takes very careful notes. He has a big database. Everybody's dyslexic. And hearing the sense of activity, and the fact that that person does not perform prayaschitta, atonement. In different religions, there's different processes of atonement. They committed some sin as a means to atone for that sin, neutralize, react to that sin. And those that have not performed atonement, and those that have done abundant sinful activity, then their sins are recited. Yamaraj decides what hellish planet they deserve to go to, and off they go to the hellish planet. So that's what the Yamadutas do. There's a little reference. Scriptural reference to the Amethyst is found in the sixth canto. This is the third canto. In the sixth canto, the story of Ajamila is told by Chittagirti of Maharaj Pritchett. And because Ajamila in his youth was a Brahmin, pious Brahmin boy. And he was engaged and trained by his father and very nicely. And married a nice southern girl and they were, you know, young, newly married. And he was engaged one day and going to gather materials for the fire yajna, walking in a forest path, gathering wood and flowers and different items. And there he saw a Shudra and a Shudrani embracing and going at it. And his mind became disturbed. But so disturbed that even when he went back, he couldn't get that vision off of his mind. He tried his formidable procedures of staying on through. Thought and sight of what he had seen, the prostitute embraced by the Shudran, a Shudra, so it wouldn't leave. So he, thinking, feeling, willing, the sequence turned into an action. He went to find the prostitute and took the saving specifically, says in Bhagavatam. The dowry that he had received from his wedding, he started spending that to go with his prostitute. And this, it went on and on. Eventually, he left his home and cohabited with the house with the prostitute. And fathered a number of children. In his elder stage of life, specifically it says he was engaged. Old man still was attracted like that. The time of death came, and when the time of death came, beyond his escape. And it was so simple. And there was this discussion where he calls for his youngest son, who he had named Narayana. He calls him great fear. That Mahabhaya fear when he saw the Yamadutta. He calls that Narayana. And the agents of Narayana came to stop the agents of Yamaraj, called the Yamadutta. And Yamadutta said, who are you? Nobody has ever, who stops death? Who do you think you are? Who are you? And they said, well, we'll tell you who we are. But first you say who you are. But we're the agents of Yamaraj, the Lord. The Lord of death. Well, if you're the agent of the Lord of death, then it's your duty to know the purpose of your master. And the purpose of the master is to, it knows Dharma perfectly well. So we have a Dharma quiz for you. And the Dharma quiz question is multiple. Is everyone? Is everyone punishable? Regardless of one's good intention, certainly some sins, some mistakes are going to be made. So if mistakes are made, does that mean everyone is punishable? Who are those that are not subject to punishment? And some of the parts. So they said something. They said, well, he did lots of simple activities, this and that. And he didn't do any atonement, no prayership. So he's subject to being punished. So please step back because we're taking it. They said, you don't know the laws of Dharma. Get out of here. Basically, the law of Dharma, yes, it's true, he thought this was good. Yes, it's true, he didn't do atonement. But he called the holy name of Narayana. And that holy name of Narayana is sufficient to eradicate the reactions of sins, not only in this life, but so many, many, many lifetimes. And not only him, but his relatives, and for so many generations, the names of Narayana are so powerful. And he was calling the name of Narayana. And yes, it's true, he wasn't even intending to call Lord Narayana's name, but he was calling Lord Narayana's name, and it's absolute. And so, step back. Leave him alone. Yeah, but this is done. You don't have to stop this. There's people. If not only in the Bhagavatam, but in the world, in religions of the world, there's acknowledgement of sin. And the nature of sin is it blocks one's vision of truth. It's a little bit of discussion that there might be. One cannot see that which is spiritual, even if it's right in front of you, it's blocked. So, and sin arises from ignorance. You don't know what's best to choose otherwise. And another description of what is the nature of sin. Is it's very, once it's there, once the impression is there, it's difficult to remove. like one of the Sanskrit words for sin is Angham. Please don't say it. I'm going to get you a sort of question. And Ka, if there was Ka, I discussed it with Radhi Kirvan. It's one of those Sanskrit syllables that can have many interpretations, but the etymology can mean goes away, and uncome means doesn't go easily. It's difficult to remove that impression from the body and the mind. And therefore, for that impression, just like in Jhanavara, something that was of nature sin, just by seeing it, he became good, and he did it, and he did it again, and it just becomes a habit, sinful propensity. From a good person, got clean, became dirty by that contact. So that's therefore, there's a within all religions of the world, there's acknowledgement of the problem of sin. Then different religions have a different view on how to get rid of it or how to address it. They also have different view on what is sin, what is virtue. But there are certain things that are known universally. Of course, the mode of darkness, faith influenced by ignorance, can get things exactly backwards or upside down. But the way to address sin is one of the ways it differentiates religion. So within the Vedas, there's acknowledgement of different principles, not only this method, that method. The Bhagavatam is advocating Bhagavat Dharma as the deterrent. Not just specifically the whole section of the sixth canto, but say not just the reaction, but even the tendency to do it again. Because you can remove, if there's weeds growing in your lawns, there's a dandelion patch, just go cut off the tops of the dandelion. The roots there is going to grow again. So you have to uproot the weeds. That's more difficult than just clipping the top. Clipping the top is pravrata karma, that karma that's fructifying now. So you can address the pravrata karma by processes of atonement, but the root is still there. And bhagavata dharma, or the process of hearing and chanting, devotional service, hearing and chanting, it uproots even tendency. The potency is there, as long as we don't make a sense. That's a whole other thing. Chin, that's it. That's a whole other side. The Yamadutas are what people who have been very sinful and have not been atoned for. And so, I don't know the science according to the Vedas of those persons that have been pious, but certainly those people that are transcendent, the agents of Lord Vishnu come, like that happened to Guru. But it was time for his death. If I come to Vimana, came, they come on board, they can use the spiritual world. They said, I want to go and have some money. But no, there was never been money. And this is speaking of meeting the Yamadutas. And if it was perceived this, is a life of godlessness, so that they adverse fruitive activity. Through that, fruitive activities can be pious or impious. Fruitive go to that city, you should do something to get them. Like this, my grand ancestor was doing the same. I'm in meditation, but I do it as you feel the pounding way. I'm studying for exam, I'm all stressed out. So I think, well, I've got a boost of meditation built up. I can do what better my studies for my exam. I know that's not the right reason to do it. How to get beyond that primitive activity spirit of purpose. You know, pious activities can also be binding upon the performance, and impious activities are binding upon the performance. This is the impious kind, godless kind, no acknowledgement of God at the center. And there's the life, the consciousness of what is like that, and that the life that flows from that consciousness is gone to the whole steps of life, including family life and occupation, and et cetera, et cetera. And now the person is very old on their deathbed, coughing and can't speak, their voice is choked up with mucus, their glands are, you know, this and that, and that present life. And here comes the Yamadutas. Architects 19. At death, he sees the messengers of the Lord of Death come before him with eyes full of wrath, and in great fear he passes still in the earth. This is Stevie's stuff. Report. There are two kinds of transmigration of living entity after passing away from the present body. One kind of transmigration is to go to the controller of sinful activities, who's known as Yamaraj, and the other is to go to the higher planets up to Vaikuntha. Here, Lord Kapila describes how persons engaged in activities of sense gratification to maintain a family are treated by the messengers of Yamaraj called Yamadutas. At the time of death, the Yamadutas become the custodian of those persons who have strongly gratified their senses. They take charge of the dying man and take him to the planet where Yamaraj resides. The conditions there are described in the following verses. Next 20. As a criminal is arrested for punishment by the constables of the state, a person engaged in criminal sense gratification is similarly arrested by the Yamadutas, who bind him by the neck with strong rope and cover his subtle body so that he may undergo severe punishment. Report. Every living entity is covered by a subtle and gross body. The subtle body is the covering of mind, intelligence, ego, and consciousness. It is said in the scriptures that the constables of Yamaraj cover the subtle body of the culprit and take him to the abode of Yamaraj to be punished in a way that he is able to tolerate. He does not die from this punishment, because if he died, who would suffer the punishment? He told that he died. It is not the business of the constables of Yamaraj to put one to death. In fact, it is not possible to kill a living entity, because factually, he is eternal. He simply has to suffer the consequences of the activity of sense gratification. Very good. The process of punishment is explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Formerly, the king's men would take a criminal in a boat in the middle of the river. They would dunk him by grasping a bunch of his hair and thrusting him completely underwater. And when he almost suffocated, the king's constables would take him out of the water, allow him to breathe for some time, and then they would again dunk him in the water to suffocate. This sort of punishment is inflicted upon the forgetful soul by Yamaraj, as will be described in the following verse. While carried by the constables of Yamaraj, he is overwhelmed and trembles in their hands. While passing on the road, he is bitten by dogs, and he can remember the sinful activities of his life. He is thus terribly distressed. Before, it appears from this verse that while passing from this planet to the planet of Yamaraj, the culprit arrested by Yamaraj's sanction meets many dogs which bark and bite, just to remind him of his criminal activities of sense gratification. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that one becomes almost blind and is bereft of all sense when he is infuriated by the desire for sex gratification. He forgets everything. When he's bereft of all intelligence, when he is too attracted by sense gratification, and he forgets that he has to suffer the consequences also. Here, the chance for recounting his activities of sense gratification is given by the dogs engaged by Yamaraj. While we live in the gross body, such activities of sense gratification are encouraged even by modern government regulations. In every state all over the world, such activities are encouraged by the government in the form of birth control. Women are supplied pills and they are allowed to go to a clinical laboratory to get assistance for abortions. This is going on as a result of such gratification. Actually, sex life is meant for beginning a good child, but because people have no control over the senses, and there is no institution to train them to control the senses, poor fellows fall victim to the criminal offenses of sense gratification, and they are punished after death, as described in these pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. An exotic description for itself. The previous section is the emphasis, well, one of the main emphasis points is attachment. If you're not attached to spirit, you'll certainly guarantee will be attached to matter. And when attached to matter, like it's being said here, one is being asked of intelligence. Intelligence is stolen. I mean, to chase after sense gratification requires material intelligence, but the intelligence is stolen. Maya Prithigena Asani Bhava Mashrika. The higher sense of what intelligence is meant for, getting free from bondage or getting free from the contamination of the children is fine. And one of discrimination is used in other ways. How to get sense gratification to become attention. It's not the criminal. Thinking this thought about CEO, out of funding, out of kill. Just like that. Business person, anything they see is how you can make money from that stuff. If you see land, if you see a bird, if you see a water, if you see anything, how to make money from it. How the intelligence works. So the intelligence of the mission of human life gets stolen or covered when elective sense gratification prevails. And that's the attachment to the sensory. That's that Krishna, thirst for the impermanent. According to something in the platform, the coverings of the soul, that which makes the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or the process of devotional service block the cause of anarthas within the heart, starts with this that Krishna gift. It's the reverse of saying, what we discussed yesterday, tattva de brahma, one's ability to understand transcendence is taken. Knowledge of transcendence, transcendent reality, is what is missing, or pidram, absent, covered, mistaken. So when that happens, then there's default, and one becomes attracted to the impermanent. And then there's categories of being attracted to the infant. The whole planet, how the material energy works, in the world of the living entity. It's the first on the list of a satrishna is just like a fashion percent object of sense gratification. And there's a whole industry called marketing that training to get people geared up run after the object of sunshine. The industry. And if you have a product, you have to have marketing tools to help people go after it. And the more one has a way of life that focuses upon that, the more remote, the more tattva becomes distant. So it's like darkness prevails and light becomes dimmer and dimmer. Then it's great that you take the spiritual facts. It's something like trying to ignite wet wood. Wood is fuel meant to burn, or has the capacity to burn. Fire has the capacity to burn. But fire on wet wood doesn't burn. It makes smoke. Because all the moisture in the wet wood, first, that has to be driven away before the wet wood can become dry wood. And then the dry wood can burn. So, something like the practice of devotional service would be supported. Very simple. But the full effect doesn't happen right away. Because it's so much contaminated by that Krishna and all of the other undesirable features that come along with Kali Yuga or a state of covered consciousness. Therefore, they in the process and faith in the persons who are administering the process. Very important. doesn't that make it so sad? It's like, you know, an example is given of having a fire, and you put the pot of what you're trying to prepare by 6 feet above the fire.
Yes.
That'd take a long time. You have to bring the pot close to the fire. And what's going to bring our attention to bear on the activities of feeling and chanting, you know, the fire, that which is fully spiritual. It's our faith that hearing and chanting is going to drive away the moisture in the wet wood, even though we're less than capable. That we think it can bring us to the point where we also can ignite, we can become fully fire-like. Often called what we use this phrase, in order to enter into fire, you have to become fire. Meaning, in order to go back to Godhead, you have to become pure. And to become pure, you have to become like Krishna. And to become like Krishna, the process is hearing and chanting. And hearing and chanting has to be done with the proper purpose or the proper intensity. Not just do that behavior and then you get a prize. That's ruined it. It's devotional. You have to want to be with Krishna. You have to trust Krishna and trust the process of Krishna. The pot comes closer to the flame. And Krishna tells us. But back to the Anadutas, they're there for persons who have simply been engaged in unrestricted sense gratification. And even you know, rationalize or in some ways justify the behavior of sin. How that self works. I mean, besides people just become compelled, they don't have control of themselves. They have some addiction or feelings to satisfy or gratify their addiction or something like that. But then, so those, the Amadutas and the sequence of they are to help people cut through that forgetfulness that they remember. Those simple activities. That's what's described. And it continues. In this case, the process of punishment is to help bring rectification. And it will certainly bring accountability for the wrong that it's done. But rectification. To remedy the condition of the soul. So much better to remedy the condition of the soul prior to that. Recognizing the codes of Dharma and submitting to the codes of Dharma. Not just because if I don't, I'll get spanked. But recognizing the codes of Dharma for the purpose, the higher purpose, to bring us again to our pure state of consciousness. And Prabhupada gives this example of the police officer. And someone is a law-abiding citizen, when they see a police officer, they feel comfortable. Oh, he's here, he is. He can protect us. And to the criminal, I make it caught, I make it catch. Because of these events that took place in Belgium, there were two, I don't know what you call them, guys at the Amtrak station in New York City, and army fatigue, standing next to each other, and then they had this routine space, one's kind of like back to back, talking to their walkie talkie, like, you know, they're looking for terrorists. They're very clear. They weren't trying to hide themselves. They're there, someone with the potential of therapy. ready to go. So, for law-abiding citizens, they're there to protect them. And for the criminal, I have to watch out for them. So like that, it's a misuse of free will as a living entity. It has its deterrent. It has its consequences. And it has its deterrent. It's not mean, although it may sound, it's not mean on the part of Yamaraj to send the opposite or the personnel of God has to have a system where there's police officers or Yamadutas and people that are responsible for their misconduct. And the punishment isn't meant to be nice. It sounds like it gives the example that a prison house is not meant to be a comfortable place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place of austerity. The one way to get out is try to break out. The other way to get out is be in good behavior. The higher purpose of all of this is including blind footed in around this part of the structured universe of that star. And there's consequences if we don't live a theistic life, a life in harmony with the will of God. There's consequences. We don't want those consequences. We don't like that suffering. So we can be good because we don't want to suffer. Higher is to restore our pure consciousness, our Christian consciousness. That's the higher teacher. That's why it's made about. After two very beautiful chapters of devotional service. Any discussion?
First thing we want to share, spoke about Akham thing. How would that be different from Apara? And second, would that include Krutam, Papam, Prarabdha, Prarabdha, all of them, or just specific?
The first is, what's the difference between sin and aparad? I've been preparing the seminar. It covers this topic, so it's like, right, it's a different topic. Sin affects the body and the mind. Impressions are made that are there in the body and in the mind. And then, because the impression is there from time to time, the thought or remembrance or the feeling appear in the body or the mind because it's the impression is there. And aparad more affects consciousness or the soul directly or the heart. It's a disposition or orientation towards adversely towards that which is spiritual. And according to Jiva Goswami, in the fourth category, God, the holy name, the devotee, and the process of devotional service would have some not proper regard for that, but for that which is spiritual in this world. And sin has this other nature. It's opposed to the principles of godly life in this world. And when one does it, it creates an impression. It specifically sticks to the body and the mind. It's embedded into the body. It also induces forgetfulness. But it's not a specific orientation. In other words, someone can do something sinful, then they're not necessarily averse to God. That's a weakness, potential weakness, but they view that. They face an expression. An offense is an attitude towards God's presence, or that which is godly, the devotee or devotion servant. So offense is more serious. Now, say the other one, the other part of the question.
Yeah,
they're just different stages of the same. Dormant, starting to fructify, almost fructify, presently experiencing the result. Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll take this in.
is the bond of is the bond of punishment correction? And if we are taken by the Yamadutta, are we getting corrected?
It's more than one purpose. That's just correct. It's accountability. In other words, if I'm a criminal and I've been in jail, I'm being punished, the message to me is, this is wrong, it's hurtful to you and to others, and you're accountable. Because it was hurtful for others in this degree, you have this degree of punishment. And so it's fully accountable for it. But it may not correct me at all. So they get out of going through the same thing. It's still much better.
But even in this material world, the departments which run the jails and others are called the departments of correction.
That's usual. That's the intention. That's not necessarily a path. So, karmically, what happens is the reaction is now covered with you for the action of the other, which was your question. There are, besides going to the other, there's supposed to be before the point of death, and one does some proper atonement. Then so the prarabdha karma, using these four, one of the four, that's neutralized. So I'm now cleared of that reaction, neutralized. But tendency remains. If there's others where there's seed and about to fructify and so forth, that they're just now coming. The other karma is neutralized with those other thoughts. So back to your question, the intention is correction. The intention is to hold accountable and to give relief from the new reaction that has come for that particular set of simple activities. And yes, it's accomplished. It's the purpose and it's accomplished. It doesn't take away the sensitivity.
When the Yamadutas or the Yamaraj inflict punishment onto the people, that is the subtle body is being punished, not the gross body. So how do people in this world perceive how it really affects in to the subtle body? Because to the general public, when we talk about these things, they cannot perceive how a subtle body gets affected and not the gross body. Because if I pinch it like that, I know it's paining because I can feel it in this, on the gross body. But pain inflicted on the subtle body, how do they perceive and how do one
work? Well, gross people I can understand even all but you know, a practical example is that they can't understand. Supposing you have a dream which goes on the subtle body, that your body is lying in the bed, then you have a dream. And in the dream, something very pleasant happens, or something very fearful happens. Sometimes it's a nightmare. And you wake up screaming, and then realize it was just a dream. But you're perspiring, the heart is palpitating. It was just a dream. But when you're in a dream, you're in a dream. The false ego is functional. It's you who was in the dream. And then you realize, oh, it was just a dream. But that's just a subtle body experience. Or the gross body. So, but the gross body also becomes affected. Supposing it's a lusty dream, or it's an angry dream. So the influence of the mind upon the body is there. A fearful dream. So as in dreams, we're experiencing what's happening in the dream, similarly, this thing that most ordinary people don't understand, subtle body, gross body, what's that? You experience, because false ego is functioning, and that, you know, that the dog was biting, you experience, although there's no gross body to bite. It's a subtle event, like a dream, subtle event. We experience that as a deal and stuff. To our dear friend Paul Pino. Part of the subtle body. Yeah.
I have at a chat that it seems the quiet of the man called at an act that caused Narayana fear, but not out of
let's go back to the difference between calling the name unintentionally and calling the name intentionally. So it's a question of consciousness, and there's reciprocation according to consciousness. Krishna teaches that process. As everyone follows my path in all respect as they surrender to me every word. So the Ajamila calling Narayana unintentionally, because he's taking a python, Narayana, please save me. It's different than, you know, oh Lord Narayana, I'm in a difficult situation. You're my protector, please protect me. Consciousness is different, but the name is still absolute, both cases. And Krishna reciprocates according to one another. The result was not that Ajamila went back to Godhead. The result was that the Vishnu just came and stopped the Yamadutta. So we get your unintentional or, you know, mind. not present with the holy day mechanical chanting still has beneficial effect, but it's avat, the shadow of the real thing, or reflection of the real thing, that's the full real thing. Now, what are the hellish planets? It's a place. So there's seven upper and seven lower planetary systems. If one takes an unfortunate birth on Earth, that's still, that's in the upper seven, at the bottom of the numbers, the seven. And it's an unfortunate prophetic, it's not a hellish, not with what happens after Yamaraj. After Yamaraj, it's one of those hellish planets. It's like at the end of the fifth canto. And it's not some remote part of Earth planet. It's an unfortunate circumstance. One can also characterize those very unfortunate circumstances like hell, like great misery. That hellish planets are far worse. To read the description, you'll understand it's far worse. They're hellish like conditions on Earth. That's what the middle planetary region. In some places very delightful, some places somewhere in between, some places greatly miserable on Earth. And then the hellish planets are, of course.
Does that mean that
if Vishnu comes, you're going to Vishnu's planet, Vishnu Loka. If Vishnu Dutta will take it to Vishnu Loka. Okay. That's true.
So it seems like the fear that it looks like it's people who are doing it. It's a representative.
Well, they're certainly sinful in the name of God, but they're certainly sinful. And their destination is not that's also. Although, they've got it just the other way around. By doing this, we'll go to heaven. What are they going to say? According to the Vedic perspective, they have faith. And their faith is destroying others, we'll go to heaven.
How much should a preacher, especially in an audience of newcomers, focus on this topic of punishment? The reason I ask is because, as I see it, one of the unique things about Lord Chaitanya's movement is it's the religion of love, compared to, say, Abrahamic religions, which tend to focus on both justice and love and punishment, like especially the evangelical card of, if you don't follow Jesus, you go to hell. That kind of message.
I wouldn't have done it.
Did not. Right.
At the same time, because, well, selfish, they go to love. and a lot, you know, individual by individual depends upon what spiritual capacity. For example, felt that comes to us with what he did. The message and the culture of that message compared in contrast with the audience that he found to be most receptive, you know, the hippie audience, culturally so far apart, so sense control, but so virtue. They're very powerful. Depending upon, for us individually, that approach, what can we do? Our capacity for it. So pointing to our capacity and pointing to our faith in the process, we can then enter the human thing. And you're using what language you're set to give the message of thought. The most important message, you know, message, lip service, but the quality of our life, quality of our heart. And genuinely get that, it's compelling. Because in fact, people are miserable and confused. That's it. Even those that have a conviction of something. Most important, just be genuine and, you know, what the teaching says, be that.
Following up from a previous question, for the story, so we also say, has the death moment ever going on our mind, ever speak to death, right? So if most people deeply believe, you know, after they sacrifice the same people, all these terrible things, they will go to hell, go to.
That's their notion. That's the place in heaven waiting for them. For stepping on, you know, the place of stuff to the body, coming into a public place and exploding their body and so many other people. That I'll probably have. That's what they do. They're close to them. They may have that aspiration, but, you know, the sin is going to check that. They're responsible. That's like the, you know, the punishment, the message. They're responsible for that destruction of their own body and the destruction of so many other bodies. They don't have the right to do that in the name of whoever. So their intention is totally misguided. And they're responsible for that. Don't see the hellish punishment. It's faith in the motivation. The second question?
So you have distinguished the different, you distinguished theme and
okay.
So, do they somehow connect it? Because whether it is offense is caused by theme, it is not caused by theme, whether offense.
Well, they are connected, and one of the connections is behind them is ignorance. The root of both is ignorance. And ignorance, the root of ignorance is ignoring Krishna. The root of all ignorance. So they're similar in that way. They have a different effect. One has one impact as I mentioned, body is the mind, particularly, and the other is your orientation in life, your heart level, your regard for that which is spiritual, that which is, although we're in the material place, there's things here that are fully spiritual. And we have, you know, our regard for those things. Think about it. Go through the list one time of the 10 offenses against the Holy Name. And each one of them is, that which is spiritual, you see as material. That which is spiritual, you see as material. That which is spiritual, you see as material. That's ignorance. But then it's like, because of that ignorance, then I make offense towards that which is spiritual. And then the power of the spiritual activity, chanting, becomes diminished. You know, like, not like the sun gets diminished because there's clouds, but the effect of the light and the heat of the sun becomes diminished from my experience of it because of the clouds depending upon the density of the clouds. By spiritual practice, the reactions for sin can become neutralized. But by spiritual practice, if I have an ill orientation towards Krishna, the offense doesn't diminish. It's far more serious. So that's some distinction between the two. I can be casual about sin, but I have to be especially careful about sin. It's not, you know, a position of cheerfulness, it's a position of being careful. Like, you know, getting a car and drive from point A to point B. You have to be careful. Yeah, it's a powerful thing. And it can get you from A to B quickly. But you have to be very careful because it's very powerful. We have this human form of life. It's very powerful. It can be utilized to achieve perfection. I have to be very careful. I mean, it's not fearful. Oh, I have a human form of life. I have to be afraid of that. Yes. Use it carefully. Responsibly. Same with emotional service or chanting. Utilize it carefully. Be careful. Carefully guard against the test. Then we get the full benefit. Including the eradication of the reaction to sin. And even the tendency to do so. Those within the process of devotion service. We just have to be careful to stop that. That's a good devotion. The big shift. Okay. Question, please?
Question, so, you were talking about how it would be like, and the
an adverse effect.
So, it's hard for me to tell that message if you look at the previous situation. The strong sense of beauty that drives their life.
My business.
And they don't mind being any obstacles or that they don't have any expenses.
My business.
Binding.
Yes. Take breath again. That's the binding.
So I think you made a lot of it, but if you look at that model and the practice that we have, there it's our former duties, but it's in a way taking to Krishna. But then what I'm seeing is learning, it's a fine line, like the sense of attraction to Krishna and wanting to do something for Krishna can be so hurt. But people need like a sense of beauty, strong sense of beauty, kind of some stuff. Like that type of war.
This is within yourself personally or in society?
What I'm also like in gender, I feel a little bit. And the beauty kind of comes down and is very exactly to Krishna.
Well, that's immature. It's not that they say reverse. It's not that the person who's a devotee, a very conscientious devotee, becomes slack in the sense of duty. Rather, the duty is is taken care of as a subset of devotion to Krishna. It's immature if I think, oh, I don't have to be so conscientious about duty, family, or whatever it is. That's immature. The mature state is that becomes stronger. In fact, do it the other way. With parents, you know, from your experience of prior your parents and prior generations there. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it mentions specifically that there's many Vaishnavas in South India, in Dravidadesh. So why is it that sense of duty is so strong? Because the sense of God consciousness was strong. And if God consciousness fades, the sense of duty still remains. And as God consciousness further fades, the sense of duty is also gone. Sense of duty is strengthened by God consciousness, not that it's diminished. The prominence of duty, without necessarily understanding the purpose behind duty, the God conscious consequence, or let's say the outcome. That's the 1866 Bhagavad Gita. That's the one thing that supports all the other things. To say, Dharma Pradyaja. Doesn't mean you become my devotee and just take Dharma and trash it. Or it becomes like, you know, take it or leave it, or it becomes less important. It becomes subsidiary to it. It becomes a natural part of a life of devotion and surrender to Krishna. And this will become less dutiful. It becomes deeply rooted in the purpose behind that duty. Yeah, so it's not duty driven, it's Krishna driven. The duty follows. The cart follows behind the horse. Just don't put the cart before the horse. And forget the horse. And where you find this as a practical example, where you find exemplary Krishna conscious person, you will find a strong sense of commitment to others, be it family and beyond family. Like the classic example of the house is on fire and the father runs into the house to rescue his child. At the risk of his life, to rescue his child, because the child's well-being is more important than his own life. And look at what Prabhupada did. The people didn't even know. And how moved he was. I mean, besides the order of the spiritual master, it wasn't just the order of the spiritual master, in the persons for the subject of that order, they're inconsequential. That was his mission. And he was saving souls. I mean, he was acting as an instrument of Krishna. And there's this particular session. He had the rest of his life. Etc.
Can it be that
it's still so much? Well, yeah, put the horse before the cart. Look at my life. What's the sense of obligation or duty? It affects to Guru and Krishna, and then there's everyone and everything else that follows behind. Maybe to the point of it being at fault, and it's so dutiful. Maybe, blurs my discrimination of what is appropriate and done to certain judgments because of the sensitivity. It's not a wrong aspiration that this one chose because that one has become strong. Dharma Dharma and Parivyas doesn't mean we'll become weak in that area. But then how you administer is Mamekam Sharanam. Whatever you do or don't do, you is our discrimination policy like that. What's the discrimination? That's the order of that which you do. Because otherwise, it's binding. Another verb. So, he died.
She's her own personal name, I'm asking.
Yeah.